On this week's episode of The Apex, I'm joined by Ryan Goodyear. Ryan's a connoisseur when it comes to pre-war motoring and vintage men's fashion. His Instagram page, Suits and Cylinders, has attracted over 58,000 followers, and he represents a source of inspiration for pre-war petrol heads and fashionistas alike. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to actually be able to speak about stuff rather than just show pictures and videos on Instagram.
Absolutely. I must say, I'm glad this is being done virtually. If we were in person right now, everyone could see how impeccably dressed you are compared to me.
I'm in my oily overalls. So.
Yeah, but it's the right style. And you've got the tie on as well. I like the tie.
Yeah, it's something that I like about, even when I'm going into the garage, put a shirt and tie on. You look good, I think, in my opinion.
Perform better as well. Yeah. And so when did your fascination with sort of vintage menswear and pre-war motoring begin?
Not as far back as you'd think, actually, from the kind of like cars I've got and the amount of clothing I've got. It's been a fast whirlwind over the last 10 years. I want to say not that long ago, but 20 years. Oh, no, I turned 20 10 years ago, and now I just turned 30. So it seems a very short amount of time in my mind, but it's a long time in collecting, I guess. But it kind of started when I left uni and I had kind of like the freedom to do what I wanted to do without the restraints of I need to focus on getting a car to ferry me to uni and back, and or I need to start looking at my career. So once I got that out of the way, it was a case of I just wanted to focus on the interest I've always had and kind of invest my money and time into stuff that makes me happy.
And what is it about the sort of pre-war era that appeals to you?
I mean, there's a lot of bad things about the pre-war era, but it's a case of just focusing on the things that actually appeal to you, like aesthetically. I think car design was, in my opinion, at its peak. It was that change of the early Edwardian kind of veteran cars going from like a block design. I mean, they're pretty beautiful cars, but it went from that into more like a streamlined design, stuff like my Rover, like the running boards and the stuff like the long bonnets on them. And it goes with clothing, really. It was a change from the formal kind of like black and white tie as a daily attire and top hats and Humbergs and that into a more of a relaxed. I know today's probably standards, a suit is more formal, but in those days it was daily wear. And it's just the aesthetics rather than anything else.
Right.
I think it's I'm like an old romantic, so some of the stories you hear as well of all the people from World War One dropping out from the Royal Flying Corps and then going into car racing. And again, you see pictures of them and they're all in their suits and shirt and tie when they're racing the cars going around Brooklyn. So,
yes.
It's very interesting to see, in my opinion.
And is there a specific decade in particular that really appeals? You know, the 20s, 30s, 40s? Do you have a sort of favourite?
It's kind of a merge of late 20s into early 30s. That was kind of like the big change in the fashion and the cars to me. I mean, you still got the Austin 7s. It didn't really change much from the 20s into the 30s. But it's that crossover. I mean, when you get into the late 30s again, it's starting to go towards 40s. And although there wasn't that much of a big change in fashion and the cars, there was actually a big kind of change in how cars are made and what features they had. You get an early 30s car like my Singer, for example. It's bare basics. It's an engine and steering and a wooden frame covered in metal. But then you get to my Rover, which is a 1939 car. It's got a sunroof, window wipers, three-wheel drive. It's got quite a lot in comparison.
I'm keen to talk more about your Singer in a minute, but I guess I think there's obviously a great synergy between cars and clothes, particularly in the pre-war era. I'm just curious, why do you think that is?
In my actual opinion, in the UK, there's always been a scene around the 1940s about remembering World War II, and you get many events around the country that kind of celebrate the victory of World War II, and it's more about remembrance than it is kind of celebrating it. And there's always been that civilian side of that kind of scene. So there's always been the suits and people having the cars from the 40s. And that's kind of where it started for me. I was big into my military. So I went to these 40s events and I had a Jeep, etc. But then it kind of transitioned into the civilian side. And I think there's always been a connection because, in my opinion, there's always been a nice if you've got a nice car, it's always nice to go out in it, dress nicely. It isn't always the case. People get as much satisfaction to go out in a car in a Genius t-shirt because they're actually enjoying a car. But I just love that. If you're going to be in a car that you spend so much time and effort in and so much money in purchasing, it would be nice to compare it with the clothing as well.
I think there's also a sort of an argument to be made at the moment that you hear a lot, and that's sort of the environmental benefit of keeping classics running. And then you have a similar argument with fashion as well, in terms of sort of fast fashion, and actually a lot of the clothing that's already been made many years ago is still fit for purpose today.
Yeah, I mean, it's why I'm a big advocate for like Goodwood Revival, etc. They're a big, I think they're about sustainable fashion and how you can still have beautiful, well-made clothes that may be 80, 90 years old in some cases, but they're still wearable and you can still wear them. For example, I've got suits dating from the 1920s and 30s. And if I'm going to London to a drinks party or anywhere really that requires a suit, I'd wear that rather than go and buy a new suit, because I've already got a quality, good-looking suit. It may not be in today's kind of cut and style, but if you go to any of the Savile Row kind of tailors now and say, can I have a suit in double-breasted, wide leg, turn-ups and stuff like that, they'll charge you probably $4,500 to $5,000 or more. And you can buy those kind of suits for, it's still kind of expensive, but £400 to £500.
I guess sort of getting into cars then, we obviously met at the NEC Classic Motor Show back in November. And I think you were on the Singer stand, I think that's right. So what's your involvement with Singer? You just mentioned you have one. What's the sort of relationship there?
So my Singer was my fourth actual classic vehicle I purchased. I was actually looking for an MG, as everybody kind of does when they look at pre-war sports cars. And I was wanting a two-door sports car. It didn't matter too much about the engine size, because there weren't many two-door sports cars back then that had a large engine. And unless you went for stuff like Aston Martins and Lagondas and stuff like that, and then you're looking at triple, quadruple of price tags. So I was looking for like a mid-range stuff, like an MGTA or something along those lines. And I just looked on eBay, and this thing popped up. I'd never heard of Singer before, other than the sewing machine company. It isn't related whatsoever, which everybody kind of asks when they say, oh, it's a Singer. Is it related to the sewing machines? And you kind of have to explain that it isn't. But so I did a bit of research into this car and Singer as a brand, and it kind of mentioned the motorsport history, which isn't as vast as MG, but you've got stuff like the Le Mans they competed in. And if you look at mostly all of the all of the charts from the Brooklands in the 30s, from the races like the Double 12 and stuff like that, and you there's always a Singer on there. In what capacity it kind of changes from each race. But so that kind of piqued my interest of this two-door British Racing Green sports car that wasn't an MG, but still had a name that was some motorsport history to it. So I kind of thought, yeah, I'll drive 9.5 hours to Newquay to go and have a look at it. And I bought it when I saw it, took it for a drive, and it's a long story going into the purchase of that, which I'll probably go into another time, but it was a very stressful experience, let's put it that way, of getting the car and stuff like that. But so I had the Singer. I bought it Easter 2021, I believe. So I haven't had it that long, and I probably blown a head gasket on it two times already. And half shafts I've done, it's all known for, but I probably use my cars like probably not to the max, but I've competed in a Double 12 at Brooklands. I do a lot of speed trials and stuff like that, which are kind of like, I don't hang back, should we say. So I kind of use the car to its max, and then luckily I can fix it all now. Before I bought the car, I didn't know anything about it. I know about mechanics, like kind of simple mechanics, but I didn't know anything about the car or how it performs. So I just kind of got to know a lot of Singer owners, and being young, with a car like that, you get to a lot of people interested in why you're actually interested in it, especially the Singer Owners Club. And I think it was back in November last year, I believe, or might have been a bit earlier this year. I got asked to be the Lincolnshire and Rutland representative for the Singers Owners Club because I wanted to inject some kind of young blood into Crane events, doing a bit more with the singer Mark, which wasn't just the average kind of like meet up at the pub every 3 months. Or I just wanted to create a bit more excitement. I wanted to do kind of trials and rallies around the local area. So that's why I was on the Sings Owners Club stand at the Plaskett Motor Show.
And so you have owned some pre-war cars before the Singer 9. That wasn't your first sort of classic experience?
No, I mean, my first pre-war car was my Rover. It's a Rover P2. It's the 14-horsepower version. So it's got the big straight six, 2-litre. It's quite a big engine. Quite goes down the road quite nicely. But it is a big, heavy four-door saloon and a lot of glass and a lot of metal. Need that bigger engine, which I enjoyed. I did quite a lot of driving in that, but it's more of a tour. And as exciting it is to go down the road in a pre-war car, I wanted something that going to be a bit more exciting. I can sling around Brooklyn, should he say. What's left of it anyway.
And so how active is the community when it comes to pre-war cars? You know, it sounds like you do go out and use these cars quite a lot, and you do go out on you know, drives, and how do you deal with reliability? Is that a big issue, that sort of thing? Because I imagine as an outsider looking in, you know, if you want to get into pre-war cars, it's like, oh, you know, that's a bit of a big step if you're not necessarily, you know, mechanically gifted or anything like that.
Yeah, I think the key there is being mechanically kind of, probably not gifted, but have a knowledge of it. Because if you have a basic knowledge, I mean, I've rode motorbikes from the age of 5. So I've been involved in engines in some way or other for quite a long time now. And when it comes to reliability, there's always the risk that something's going to go wrong. You could leave the garage and everything's working perfectly fine, but you can go a mile down the road and the car jet might get blocked or the gasket might fail on you. And then you're kind of thinking, well, what's gone wrong? And it can only be one of three things, either fuel, fire, or air. So it's kind of, you go through that kind of, if ever anything ever happened, you go through that kind of logical steps of check that, what is it, try and fix it at the roadside kind of thing. But it can be daunting.
It helps as well, having that sort of community aspect, you know, lots of people that are there to sort of help you out if you, you know, get stuck, that sort of thing.
I mean, there isn't the largest of groups at a younger age, which is I'm trying to get more on board with. In the new year, I'm going to do a bit more involved in events, probably a club creation of some kind of like up to a 30-year-old kind of age kind of period. Just get people a bit more involved, because like I say, the big car market at the minute is like the 70s and 80s, Fords and Fiestas, which I grew up on. I through my teens, I had Fiestas, and I used to go to Santa Pod, and I was into the modified car scene and stuff like that. That's another story. It's trying to get people to understand that, yes, it is, they are old, and they're kind of like an unknown world to like an outside kind of person coming into it. But it is a simple thing to get into, and it's hand-on stuff. If you're happy to get into the garage and get your hands dirty, you can fix anything, really. I mean, most of the cars I've got, I've still got the original manuals, and 9 times out of 10, I go back to that to have a look at how to fix something, because nothing's changed. It's still there. That spark plug's still in that place. It's quite easy, and there's no electrics to get involved either, as such.
I guess talking of events as well, you mentioned the Goodwood Revival. I mean, I imagine that sort of, you kind of live the revival every day almost, don't you? I mean, is that event sort of the highlight of the year for you?
Yeah, I mean, it celebrates kind of like the late 40s onwards, so 50s, 60s, which is great because I have a big interest in those cars and that fashion as well. And it's a chance to me to go there in my kind of 30s and 40s clothing without looking out of place, should we say. Yeah, it's a great event. I'm a big advocate of what they do, keeping the history of motorsport alive. I mean, it's a beautiful track on its own anyway. So to see some of the cars going around there, it's pretty amazing. It's just disappointing there isn't an event like that that focuses on the more kind of pre-war stuff, because there's loads of places out there still, like Brooklands, etc., that had the racing during the 30s. But I guess it's going into that. The 50s was a bit more upbeat and a bit more the music was a bit more lively, and I think it appeals to people a bit more than probably the some of the depressing times during the 30s.
Are there any sort of sort of fashion events that are a bit more geared towards the 20s and 30s style that stand out in your mind?
Again, no, not really. There's places like fairs that sell clothing that people go dressed in. But there isn't actually any events out there that focus on the pre-war kind of stuff. There's obviously trial events, speed trials that have a cut-off point of 1940 cars. One that I went to recently, put Grimsthorpe speed trial, and it has a cut-off of, I think, 1940, which is great because, in my mind, I want to go somewhere to see all the cars I'm interested in. I love seeing wartime cars. I love seeing 50s, 60s cars, but I want, if I want to be, immerse myself into kind of like an event that's just pre-war, that's quite nice to know that there's a cut-off. So you got all the Bentley three litres going down there, and the Bugattis and the Aston Martin and the Lagondas. But they're all from the 30s era, the 20s and 30s era. So it's quite nice. And sadly, there isn't more of it, which is nice to have. I always think, it's going to take off. Thousands of people are going to come and all that. Then you think, how popular actually is it? It'd be nice for it to be popular. Because the market for pre-war cars at the minute isn't kind of great. There's less interest in the purchase of them, going more favourable towards the later cars. But hopefully, like any market, it'll come back up and there'll be an interest.
There definitely is an interest there in many respects, because, I mean, your Instagram, for example, Suits and Cylinders, that has, 58,000 followers now. Yeah. You know, how have you found that as a platform and the interaction from other people?
All positive, to be honest with you. I was dwindling along at like 8,000-10,000 followers for probably about 5 years when I first started Instagram. And then kind of like the reels come into it. And I was an advocate. Yeah. I don't want to post a reel. Instagram is about photos. It's nice to take a good photo and show it off without being surrounded by all the rest of the rubbish that social media is surrounded with most times. So I was like, I didn't post a reel for like at least probably half a year. And then I was like, well, the trouble is now the kind of algorithm is going towards more videos. It's pushing that content. Posting photos, which I thought was great, but they won't go anywhere, which sometimes I'm not too bothered because I do it for myself, and it gives me a platform to show my kind of adventures off and what I'm doing. So it doesn't really matter how many people kind of interested, as long as I'm able to show it, kind of thing. But then I started posting reels, and then just kind of grew and grew. I think there's a lot of growth on there to be had at the minute, trying to get out there and network with what the interest you're in. So I've got friends that are like constantly posting reels and they've gone from like 10,000 up to 200,000-300,000. And it can happen within a week sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just time consuming, really is time consuming to create content. Especially with the cars, because you have to get them out and you have to make sure they're all okay. And then you have to go out and do the content. And then I tend to only do content if I'm actually going out for a drive or going to an event. So it brings enjoyment of I'm actually doing something about my day rather than just going out to create content. But most of the time, I get good feedback and a lot of people are interested in what car it is or what I'm wearing. And then combined, some people really love. So it's good to see that there is people interested in it.
And I imagine it does, you know, for you and your sort of personal brand as well. I think, is that what got you some involvement in The Crown? Or are we allowed to sort of bring that up and talk a little bit about that? Because I know you've done some filming for that, which is pretty cool.
I mean, ever since I was very young, I've always wanted to get into like the film world. So I think when I was at college, I started filming Downton Abbey. And I went to Lincoln College, and they used Lincoln Castle as part of that filming. And on my lunch break, I went up there and said, oh, what's going on here? They were filming Downton Abbey. So I walked into the costume department, not knowing anything about it. And I said, oh, are you here for filming? And I just said, yeah. And they said, oh, can I have your name? And they put it down. So you're not on the list. I said, oh, no, it won't be. I just walked in and said, oh, well, do you want to be in it? I was like, okay. So I was an extra for that. And then it kind of like sparked off, oh, I'll go and be be an extra something else. And I then became a bit more involved with kind of like the crew side of stuff. So I was doing stand-in work and body doubles, which wasn't seen, but I think I was a stand-in for David Thewlis. And if you're a Harry Potter fan or a fan of, I think it was Naked, the film, he could go back in the 80s or 90s. It was great to see him and work with him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, the actual Crown was a bit of an accident because I applied to just be an extra in SA and I couldn't make the fitting because it was down in Elm Street Studios in London. So I said, I'll back and do next week. And I said, okay, we might have to kind of let you go and release you. And then they came back to me saying, do you want to be a main character? So I said, well, yeah, but I've not had much acting experience in the past. I said, it's just reaction and you might get a line if you're kind of lucky. So I said, yeah, okay. And then they kind of put me down as Ben Elliott, which is Camilla's nephew. I mean, I'm a big fan of The Crown anyway. It's a great series, the actual filmography and the costume and the atmosphere and all this. It's brilliant. So to be actually on it and get in at the last second before the season finished, yeah. It's interesting. I've yet to see it. I think it comes out on Thursday, the 14th of December. So,
did you get lucky? Did you get a line?
No, sadly not. I'll be lucky if I even get used.
Going back to Revival briefly, I mean, if people are looking for sort of inspiration for that event as well, I know you have a shop as well, don't you? You've got Blitz and Bobs. Is that where you sort of sell some vintage clothing?
Yeah, so I've been doing that since about 2017. It kind of stemmed from finding stuff for myself and then finding other stuff and not being able to leave it there. I used to buy stuff and just bring it home and not do anything with it, hoard it, should we say. But then I thought it'd be nice to actually give it a new home. So I started an online kind of shop. It's more like I'll be selling off my collection. But yeah, that goes down really well. I got kind of customers and a lot of new friends out of it because I trade down in London. There's something called the Classic Car Boot Show, which again is about classic cars and selling clothes out of the back of them. So I go to that. And then there's a couple of events around the country that focus on kind of vintage fashion that I sell out. It's mainly all online and it kind of goes worldwide. It's Japan, you've got Australia, America, Canada. Everywhere, really. And it's quite nice to give this clothing a new home and see other people enjoy it.
Well, there's clearly some demand for it then, if it's going worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, I think vintage fashion as a whole at the minute there's a big demand. I think there's so many different interests and eras. When I was probably 18, 19, 1930s and 40s, there probably was a market for there, but I didn't see it. But now it's like, there's a lot of people getting into that earlier style of clothing. They might not wear it as it would have been worn. They wear it in their own way, which is quite nice to see. And again, the 60s and 70s fashion is peak at the moment, and then 90s fashion as well. You know, I don't think there's anybody into modern day fashion, whatever that could be.
To end on, I'm keen to ask some quick fire questions. First one is, I'm curious to know what your dream three car garage looks like.
It's a tough one because it keeps on changing. I've got a dream garage for like older cars, and I've got a dream garage for modern cars.
The older cars.
I would love a Fraser Nash, pre-war Fraser Nash, purely because I've done some family history recently. Beautiful cars. My great uncle, he was a test flyer for de Havilland Aircraft back in the 30s, and he was best friends with the owner of Fraser Nash during the time, and they had a race, one in his my great uncle in his aeroplane and his friend in the Fraser Nash. So it'd be great to have that kind of connection, that car in my garage. Second would be a Bentley, whether it be a 3 litre Van den Plar, or I mean, everybody wants to say the pin-up car of the 30s, which I call the Bentley Blower. Beautiful cars. I got a friend that owns one, and I've seen Goodwood did a big revival on them. And then the third one, it's got to be a car that I already have, because I love the cars that I have and enjoy them, so I've got to keep my singer, I'm afraid.
Good. That's a good sign.
I don't want to replace stuff. I want to enjoy it. I bought the stuff because I like it rather than kind of like anything else. So it'll be nice to have other cars, but I'm afraid I don't think it'll be limited to three cars if I had free will.
And do you have a sort of pre-war fashion or sort of racing idol?
Not particularly, no. I've read quite a lot onto the kind of the pre-war racing drivers, etc. I'm more interested in not about the ones that are put on posters and stuff like that, more about the everyday kind of races of the era. Because you see, you go through the records of like the Brooklands races, and it's just business owners that have got a nice car. Or I'm actually really interested in the ladies and the women races of the time. My singer actually belonged to a racing driver of the 30s, a lady racing driver, and she raced at Brooklands, not in that car, but you've got records at Brooklands, and I just like that day-to-day life of there wasn't a professional racing driver, but there was blaring around Brooklands at 100 miles an hour sometimes, and I kind of like that kind of side of stuff.
And do you have a sort of favourite outfit that you own or a favourite look?
It's one thing I do like about the pre-war kind of fashion. There's a look for kind of all occasions. I know there is today this sportswear that you can wear today if you're going to the gym or if you're going outside and it's raining and you wear a waterproof jacket. But back in that, in the 30s, there was clothing specifically made. Like the cut of them was there's stuff for driving, there's stuff for walking, there's stuff for flying. And I think I just love that ability to be, if I'm going out for a walk in the country, I wear like tweeds and plus fours. I mean, they look kind of different for today's what people wear today, because they're like cut off trousers tucked into your socks, but they're actually usable. They're useful. You don't get your trousers soaking wet when you're walking. Again, if I'm going to the city, going for drinks, I've got nice suits there, Savaro tailored suits. If I'm in my car, I've got a big collection of like leather driving coats and motoring coats, and gloves and caps and goggles and stuff like that. So I wouldn't say I have a favourite look. I've got nice stuff to wear when the occasion kind of suits.
Yeah.
But it's more I prefer the more workwear kind of look. I don't want to be in the suit all the time. I like to have a leather jacket on underneath a bonnet of a car, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ryan, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. It's super interesting to hear a bit more about the sort of pre-war era. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It's been nice to actually talk and answer questions on my passion.